Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. I have a great show here tonight, and my very good friends over at GNL Guitars are here. Dave McLaren, president of GNL. David Brown, the custom shop artist relations guy. And Ron Marino, very longtime friend, the national sales manager. And Ash Janda is the good friend of theirs. I think he's been playing the GNLs for a while. He's here to demonstrate the guitars. And we have a bunch of cool stuff that they're going to talk about, some new things. And I want to get into a little bit of the custom shop because if you go on to the All About Guitar Facebook page, a few months ago, I did a tour of the facility, and I did a couple of videos with David talking about the different types of things that he does in the custom shop. We'll go into more detail about that in a minute, but I just want to welcome all you guys. It's great to see you back again, and it's always a pleasure to have a bunch of guitars in the room.
Thank you for having us.
So anyway, let's talk a little bit about what's coming up. I'm going to kind of nudge you guys to get a sneak peek. I know some stuff is top secret, but like, what can we expect at NAMM, and what's new at you guys?
Well, as we look at each other, well, how far do we want to go with that? You can see some of the direction that we've done this year with the CLF research models, where some of this stuff, it's kind of our close look at our history, and sometimes you think you know it because you're in your filing cabinets, you walk past it all the time, you think you know it, but decades go by, and what you know about it is actually less and less, right? Mm-hmm. So this year we really spent a lot more focus on the things in our history, studying old models and so forth, and that has sort of influenced some of our designs this year, like the CLF Research L2000 bass, L1000 bass, the Skyhawk guitar. So these are things where we're making stylistic nods, maybe functional nods to models from the past, but we're also doing the latest and greatest things we can because we know that Leo Fender would expect whatever you guys are doing, for example, in your neck, your truss rods and stuff, you should be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So we've also used that as sort of a springboard to go, all right, some of the things that Leo Fender gave us, we've tweaked and are really great, but what if we start to think if Leo Fender were to create, maybe look at other things that perhaps weren't popular in the marketplace at the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Imagine it was the 80s. You look at Doheny, they would have never considered doing that because, you know, jazz masters, that wasn't happening then, right? If it was today, they would probably be looking over and go, well, that's kind of cool. Maybe we could do stuff, our thing to it. And the Doheny guitar, that's very much in that vein, where particularly my brother Johnny, who's the sort of the chief geek in that, he was trying to imagine, well, if we were to do a Jazzmaster pickup or that kind of shape, with Leo's magnetic field design technology, mm-hmm. how might he go about it? What kind of parameters might he choose? Mm-hmm. The aperture, kind of how wide mm-hmm. it is that you can wind the wire around, and how many turns would it do with the magnet and those kind of things. But I think we did a pretty good job on that because it was very well received, and we were very proud of it. Then almost immediately, people said, would you make one with humbuckers? Which I kind of think that means, you know, let's put some Gibson kind of humbuckers, yeah, which is really cool. I mean, it's a great thing. You know, you could see these toppings on different shaped pizzas, and you know what it's mm-hmm, about, mm-hmm. right? And that's absolutely cool. We do that. It's great fun. But we thought after Doheny, it would be, should we not at least make an effort to create some kind of special humbucking pickups for the thing, you know? Because we really spent a lot of time doing the Doheny single coil, so if we're going to do a humbucker, we should really take our time. Just don't try to cut stuff, make it happen. But we did, in the early springtime of this year, we began to work on Doheny humbuckers, and, you know, Johnny begins with the pole spacings and so forth. And it turns out the interesting thing is the pole spacing, it came out almost the same as what, almost exactly the same as the 70s Music Man Stingray guitars bridge pickup.
Really?
In a Jazzmaster kind of format, you know, mm-hmm. you've got two pickups, you have the same pole spacing. But he chose that because it also lined up pretty well with the neck position.
Yeah.
So this is the kind of geekery that he does. Well, I'm thinking about sounds and possibilities and functions and so forth. And my brother Johnny gets his hands more dirty than that. But in the spring of this year, we started assembling them, and the first pickups, they were horrible. And in fact, the second and third pickups were horrible. They were hot. They were
way
just
too loud.
I said they were just like a dumpster fire. Mm-hmm. And after like three, four, maybe five or six sets of pickups, it just felt like it wasn't really going anywhere. And I really didn't know what it wanted to be because I felt like we were being pushed into the mission to make humbucking pickups, not what should this guitar be about. So it sat for a couple months maybe, yeah. And just kind of hiding out because I don't know what to do with mm-hmm. it. So then we took another stab, and we went way with the other way. We really took a lot of wire off, and we were trying different types of wire, and we approached it. We're going to start with this really nice, light, sort of jangly thing, and then we'll give it a little bit more fire to it. So once we started the other way around and thought about how Leo might use the pickups to offer what I call fundamental coil control, rather than here's the pickup and, you know, traditionally, like a Gibson pickup, you'd have two leads that came mm-hmm, out, you know, mm-hmm. and then you could later have, you know, four leads.
Mm-hmm.
But we thought, could we create something where it will sound very good as a series humbucker, mm-hmm. particularly in the bridge position? Because if it doesn't rock, don't talk to me about humbuckers, you know?
Right, right.
Because
right.
That's the first thing you expect, because if the people were coming from a position of, if you put two humbuckers on it, I know it's going to rock. So if you come at me with something different, make sure it ticks certain boxes for me, or don't waste my time. So we had to make sure it did that. But also, if it could sound very musical and jangly in as a parallel humbucker and as a single coil. So this is, once we started narrowing down some parameters and bouncing around, and we found things that sounded really great in the neck and the bridge,
mm-hmm.
having those coils controlled, the question was, well, how much control should we give the guitarist? Because usually there's not many controls. You know, guitarists tend to have less things on it. Even bass players tend to have a bit more, maybe a couple more switches on, that kind of stuff. And we tend to push it even with one maybe extra mini toggle. So here we are, we have a three-way, and we have one toggle that controls the coils of one pickup, and another one that controls the other pickup. So that's two. So there was some fear that that might be somewhat rejected. But on the other hand, Leo Fender tended to want to trust that musicians have the competency to deal with additional controls should they be presented to them. And the controls are doing something very useful, not kind of frippery stuff. But if it was very good and solid kind of control of the instrument, yeah. He was a fan of giving that control to the musician, but I think we've sort of shied away that in recent years. But because we designed these pickups that they could do these three things so well, let's give them the individual controls.
Yeah.
And as a CLF research model, we sort of let that stretch out. If we're going to do something a little weird, we're going to go for it with the CLF research one, because that was, in a way, I think if Leo could get away with putting a couple switches on without getting, say, pushback from sales, he would, because it's cool. You could do that much.
Well,
more
I think that, like, for example, on you have the three pickup setup guitar, like a regular Strat setup, and you have a toggle. I'm spacing
expander,
on
the expander switch.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So you can, because one of the things that you could never do on a Strat is do like the Tele, where you had the bridge and the neck pickup. And with your toggle switch, it allows you to get all three pickups, which has never been done by any other guitar that I know of, unless it's custom, and be able to do that. So I feel that if the toggle's functional like that, where it gives you other possibilities, the guitarist will use it. It doesn't mm-hmm. matter. And it does make a difference, playing those different pickups. It really does. I also want to point out, in listening to what Dave's saying in terms of the process of developing the pickups, if you listen to the one of the earlier shows that we did, we talked in at length about the development of the original Doheny pickup, and it's amazing the amount of work that they do, the trial, you know, working through and getting, trying different windings, trying to get the thing to sound just right. And with this pickup, what I noticed different than the traditional humbucker, and I think that's part of the jangliness of it, is a humbucker, like a regular old type of, you know, 50s, 60s Gibson humbucker, when you really punch the guitar or you have it set up so that it's like really, you know, as hot as you can get it, not the wiring, but like with the pole pieces, like we would bring the pole pieces close to the strings, and you're playing and you're really thrashing around, the pickup distorts. The pickup has like a modulation distortion. It interacts and it kind of gets dirty and weird. It's a nice sound, but it gets a little mushy sometimes. And I think with the super distortions that were popular in the 80s and stuff, when they got, you lost a lot of high end, you lost a lot of low end, but you got this like mid sound, but it would get mushy. These pickups, I'm noticing, is that there's no distortion in that when you play the guitar. And I've been down to I've actually tried the earlier version of this, and we cranked it up in an amp, and it, but the pickups, each of the notes are clean. They don't interact like that. So you get that clarity. So like when he, you know, do me a favor, and Ash, play, just give me like a jangly type of sound. Now he's not playing really loud high gain, but you can hear the clarity in the. You're hearing everything clear, and it's not it's hard to describe it, because it is a desirable effect on an old Les Paul or something. It has its own place, but this sign, it gives you, it's closer to getting like a very quiet, you know, when you do single coil, but also too, it gives you all that tonal versatility. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of frequency response here that you're getting that you don't get on a normal traditional humbucker.
Yeah, well, it doesn't follow the rule of an Alnico pickup. It's very easy to figure out with an Alnico pickup how many wire, what type of magnet you're using, and you can get close based on the number of winds. In this case, it was it's not chartered, and it's a different with a magnetic field.
Is this Alnico?
No. What? That's why. It's just it's an entirely different approach to making the pickup.
Oh, okay. So the magnet's totally different,
yeah,
too. Because it's a great sound.
So the point is it where you have like, if there's a conventional pickup design, and you go, well, I'm going to alter that a little bit one way or another, but the parameters there, you know, if you're going to make, say, a Gibson pickup or that kind of thing, we just started with, well, we're just going to construct it under this Jazzmaster cover, but after that, we're going to make a magnetic field pickup, you know, like technologically, but everything else was free range, so we didn't have anything to go on. Really, so it was kind of, it was fun. So we got to start from How much space do we have?
Right. Now, how much from what you did on the original Doheny, how much did that come to play on this? In other words, what did you learn from the Doheny? Did that help develop this faster, or was it a totally different game?
The only thing, early on the Doheny, you know, with the two single coil pickups, it served to make the early prototypes of the V12 pickups, it served to make them look particularly bad because the Doheny pickups, the single coils, were just so good.
Yes, yes.
But each time pulling out the Doheny with the single coils, the reminder of the kind of jangle and air and dimensionality that you could get, you know, that space that you hear, it was like such a high water mark, you know, that we didn't want to lose that entirely in the quest for something, you know, saying humbuckers. There was just, how could we capture some of that? So we couldn't quite do it the same, but we could. It was an aspiration. So that was sort of a guiding thing where, yes, we wanted it to be able to rock. So I knew the bridge position series wide open. If it does not scream to Marshall, then, you know, it had to do that. But at the other end, if we could get some of this magic, jangly stuff, air, that we got from the Doheny single coils, I think that's about the best we could do. So the last 200 or 300 turns on a pickup this way was rough battle.
Mm-hmm.
But once we got down there, we finally thought, well, we're going to have to make a decision, and we did.
Right.
So we're very happy.
Now, we'll go through in a second and show what the toggles do so you hear the differences in the pickup. But one of the things I've noticed is that when you go to single coil, there's not much loss of gain. Is that because of the difference in the design, or is that – what did you discover when you were experimenting with? Because it sounds – the single coil sounds pretty hot. I mean, close to the humbucker.
Well, you're going to notice it a little bit more when you move to the series position than the parallel. Because,
mm-hmm,
you know, the parallel position, you don't get quite that same series boost, you know, that bassiness that you would, mm-hmm, in the series mode. So I think, mm-hmm, moving from the single coil to the series, you're going to notice more. Not much you can do about that, but from single coil to parallel, yeah, they do sound a bit different. Just the parallels has the jangliness, but there's just more of a, like, a fullness about it.
Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and let's show. You want to start with the neck pickup or the bridge pickup?
Sure.
Okay. So he's, and then just tell us what the toggle does, so they understand.
Okay. Right now, Ash is in the neck pickup.
Yeah. Look, he's inside.
Yeah. And he's in parallel mode.
He's in parallel. The toggle's all the way down.
Yes.
Okay, now he's in the middle one.
Single mode.
Does he have the bass?
Okay, that's all. So you hear a little spark in there, but in the parallel mode, it's a fuller sound. So go back to the parallel mode.
It's a nice, fuller sound. That's the single coil. Just chimes.
Well, the other thing is the PTB. So, I mean, depending on where he's going to start with the treble and the bass, makes a huge difference, right? Because if you cut the bass,
no, turn the bass up and bring your volume down for a second.
Yeah,
and then switch between the two. No, the reason I like the parallel is it has more, you hear more of the overtones between the, it brings out the string a little bit more. It's just so crystal clear. But all three modes are really usable.
The fun thing is that you can go, hey, you got one switch to control the modes of just the neck pickup, and the other switch controls the modes of just the bridge pickup. So, hey, if you got them together, it's like, I want to have a series neck pickup, and I want a single bridge pickup. I can, vice versa.
Yeah, so you have the same. We'll listen to the bridge pickup in a second. But I want to ask Ash something real quick, and that is, in using, I tend to, on my older guitars, the old days, as an old rock and roller, I just keep the volume and the treble up full and just go and adjust from the amp most of the time. And a lot of that's from the practicality of that, you know, going through a pedal board or whatever. You lose a lot of signal, so you just try to keep the output as hot as you can. And a lot of guys have modified their guitars where they bypass all the controls and just straight pickup. But I notice, G&Ls have always had plenty of gain and a lot. And I notice you roll off a lot, and like with the volume pedal and the volume control, and also the treble and bass, you play around with it a lot. What I wanted to ask you is, do you when you're playing like a rock gig where you're really cutting out, do you play around with that a lot? Do you roll off a lot? And also when you do roll off from the volume, is it like traditional guitars where you lose the high end a little bit, like how Clapton gets the woman tone? Or is this pretty much straight all the way around?
Well, when I'm playing a rock gig, sometimes I'll just clean it up here, versus I just leave my gain all the way up and just kind of work the knob. Mm-hmm. Just for different sections of the song and how much breakup I want, depending on how hard of a rock gig it is.
Right.
Kind of like Van Halen style.
But do you lose highs when you bring that down?
I haven't found that experience with the Doheny.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I noticed that on the Doheny, the single coil, too. When you lowered the volume, you didn't lose the top.
It's almost like he's got an internal buffer in there. It's not, but it has that effect.
Right.
Trouble me.
You know, and like Clapton used it as a specific sound, but it's interesting. I mean, it to me, to not lose the high end, it's very important. Like you can bring the volume down so you can clean it up a little bit and dirty it when you need to, and just adjust. You don't have to go near the amp. You know, I think that's significant. But you use I noticed that when he was in here warming up before the show, he's adjusting constantly. He's using all those knobs consistently.
Yeah, and really, what he was just mentioning about where you get to the middle position, you have it doubles up how many choices you have. I found that pretty fascinating because just by having both pickups on, I have these three tones that are here, plus these three tones, and then the combination. So it's like nine possibilities. Yeah. Not to mention messing with this.
Yeah, I mean, you have a lot of. Yeah.
There's always room for one more knob.
Well, let's go ahead and let's listen to the treble, the bridge pickup real quick and go through the three modes. And then let's try some of the combinations that, and you guys can chime in with what you found would be really cool ones to do. So we get an idea of what this, because there's just so much to this guitar. It has that Telly spank to it. It's got all that you can get anything out of there. I mean, it's got a lot of tonal versatility.
You know, the other day we were watching one of the guests who was just noodling away on one of these things. You know, already had some seat time, so already was able to click around to some mm-hmm. favorites, you know. And I remember sitting back after that a moment later going, how many guitars was that?
Yeah. I mean, and especially these days where you have to fly with one guitar, you very rarely get to take a second one. That's why I've taught even the single coil one is really versatile in itself, but this does even more. It's really amazing. I mean, this, again, if I was touring, I would take one of these because I can, even if it was just the single coil, it's close enough to get me a humbucker sound, has enough gain to push it. But at the same time, I can get all these other tones. And this thing is great.
Well, recording it would be, yeah. you know, for someone, you know, who is able to open a lot of possibilities and not have to change a guitar.
Yeah.
Just sit in front of Pro Tools or whatever it is and be able to work it out with whatever it is you need.
Now, let's take a listen to both pickups and let's just show some of the potential in terms of dialing in, whether you're using the parallel, the single, and just kind of give us a little... So we're what, single and single? Single and humbucker and the bridge.
Neck is series humbucker. Now the neck is parallel humbucker and the bridge is still single. Parallel neck and a series bridge, both humbuckers. That was tough to have around when doing this, but in the end we have a single coil on this that's not the Doheny single coil, but a really nice MFD single coil. And it happens to do a bunch of other stuff as cool humbuckers.
No, the your single coil mode is that pickup strong. But again, go to one pickup right now, either one, it doesn't matter, and go from the parallel to single and just play the same thing. And then just switch between the art
from single to parallel, or from parallel to series.
From series to single.
Okay.
Because series is the closest to like a standard.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So just go to single. The output is almost the same. That's pretty close. It's pretty consistent, and that's important because when you're using pedals and you're changing around and stuff, all of a sudden you don't have the drive that's going, you know, you set up a sound like you're using a processor, and it's not...
That's actually a big deal because a lot of guys that go to a humbucker and a guitar, the difference in setting on a pedal board, boost or otherwise, I mean, it just jumps out at you. In this case, you're relatively safe depending on what you're going to stop on your pedal board. So you don't have to worry about 10 dB coming out back at you. So.
Yeah, that is amazing how that is. That's pretty close.
You will not need a booster pedal unless you absolutely.
No, one thing, any G&L guitar, there's plenty of volume. I mean, like I've told you before with my bass, I used to run that direct without a direct box, and it would pin the needle. It was... you know, it was putting out a few volts into the, I literally threw the board. They were amazed at that bass. It was just so much output from that thing. And I very rarely used anything. It was direct. Talk about totally direct. That was totally direct. This is an amazing, amazing guitar. Now, is this available now or not yet?
We're just starting to ship them.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, they're out there.
And this, you can do, this is, this model is also available in the custom shop?
Yes.
So, now let me, I said that on purpose because I want to seg to the custom shop a little bit. And again, like I said, several months ago I had done a tour of the facility, and I basically got to sit down with David, take a look at the Facebook Lives, because he talks about the different woods and what he can do. But I'm going to have him talk a little bit about, you know, one of the things is, why custom? Why go custom? Because, and I'm not saying that in a derogatory sense, because all their guitars off the shelf are just amazing, you know. About a month and a half ago, thanks to you guys, I was able to do this test with Savera Strings, and they gave me two Doheny's and two 2000s, I think it was, the basses. And the consistency between those guitars was amazing. It was just, and, you know, so... But I wanted to kind of go in, what kind of thing, what is the, besides the fact that you have different types of necks, and I want you to go into that a little bit, but talk a little more, what are your options? Why would you want to go custom? What can you do?
So just to get the neck shape thing out of the way first, the neck shapes that were previously available in the catalog, in the order catalog, are still available, but they're in custom shop now. Things like soft V-neck.
That's a couple of them there. Most of the other ones.
Yeah, most of them, they're still there. But we're focusing more on materials and different pickup configurations and routings. So this particular one that we have here has a spalted maple top on it. It is...
do me a favor, hold that up matched. So they can see that in the camera. I mean, that is amazing.
Gorgeous.
Yes, I love that finish. That
and a color that we call Aqua Burst.
Yeah, that burst is nice. And what's the fretboard?
That is Caribbean Rosewood.
Okay, yeah, you had told me about that at the time I was there before. The what are the options for the next?
As far as materials? Or well... You can get anything from caramel ebony, Caribbean rosewood, Indian rosewood. We still have some of that available. We're also doing many roasted maple necks, as well as just natural maple necks, and they all come in different grades of flame, 3A, 5A. That's mostly the two varieties that we use. You're able to obviously use opt out for a bird's eye maple fingerboard. We have those as well. Some of the things that we've been doing is we're trying to use Caribbean rosewood now as a replacement for Indian rosewood, and it's a really, I think it's a really nice alternative because it's a little bit more dense than rosewood, not as dense as or bright as ebony is, but the grain's a lot tighter. The grain comes in many different shapes. This one's the kind of wavy style grain. You can also get a very straight grain.
Yeah, I noticed from what you showed me before, too, the grain looks beautiful. You can't see it on the camera, and it's hard to, even with my shooting a picture of it, it's hard to see the detail, but it's really beautiful.
So that one is done on a maple neck, and that looks like to be it, quarter sawn maple. All the custom shop necks are hand-sanded, and they're hand-sanded by me. I have to do that simply because we want to make sure that we get the shapes right. Things like the soft V neck, the modern C-shaped neck. We're also make sure that we do a nice edge roll on the necks, and it just works out really nice.
The edge, you can't see it, but if you were playing it, the way a lot of the edges of these frets, they're kind of
the edge roll.
Yeah, so it's real smooth. So it doesn't grab when you're flying around.
So, and then we're also experimenting with different finishes, different styles of finishes, not the materials. We're talking about this one here being one of them. We also have, I'm right now messing around with a lot of the grain fillers that we normally use for ash in particular. So we have different color grain fillers that we use, just to bring out the grain for certain colors that we do, transparent colors. We're using Guanacaste, which is, what do we call it, monkey pod sometimes, but Guanacaste is really the...
It's its own thing, but it's, it looks like that darker walnut finish.
Right, right. You
know, isn't that also the East Indian walnut?
Yeah,
is that what
they call it?
Walnut.
What are you finding with those woods? What, if you can, what are you finding in terms of tone so people can get an idea of if I order this, it'll sound like this?
Well, in particular, the Guanacaste is probably at the at on one end of the tone range simply because it sounds very warm. It's a lot more, the grain's more open than, say, mahogany or even the Okume stuff. So if you want a really warm-sounding tone, just as a foundation, Guanacaste is a good choice. Next would probably be the Okume that we use. A lot of it's coming in with a lot of flame and a lot of grain showing through. Then would be mahogany, but we have mahogany, and you can certainly order an instrument made of mahogany, but it tends to be a little bit heavy.
Well, in terms of what we're used to, These other woods that you just mentioned, would they be more like an ash sound or more like a mahogany sound or more like a alder sound?
Guanacaste, Okume, and mahogany would be more like the mahogany sounds on the warmer side. You start getting brighter as you go from mahogany to ash, for example. Ash is right in the middle. And then you have alder as it starts to brighten up a little bit. Alders are really nice.
But it depends on how you pair the neck. So if you go with a maple fingerboard, obviously you're going to be able to bring out a little more brightness than you would rosewood, right?
Rosewood.
So it depends on how you pair.
Are there alternatives to alder? Or is alder not endangered? Is it pretty easy?
No, alder's pretty rare. Alder's a weed wood, so it's always available. It's not going
So alder will be alder.
As a matter of fact, ash was in a little bit of a peril a few years ago, but they're starting to farm it. It's being raised in farms now, so the price has gone down, and because usually you used to get the swamp ash from the south, from the southeast, Louisiana, that type area, but now it's all there's some farms now in Germany that are growing this stuff, so it'll be around for quite a while, and we're getting some really nice ash stuff. As a matter of fact, that's the material that I'm using most of the time is ash.
Hey Dave, you may not see it, but those prices aren't going down.
They're not necessarily going up either, but
well, it's more available, so it's not.
It's more readily available. Yeah, yeah. There was a scare of
things might not go down, but at least people, if there's, it's available, it's a little more competitive, and you can.
Yeah,
the thing is, in our world, the quest for is cooler, and then you start pressuring the supplier. Well, you know what? We'd really like to do this weight spec thing, and so you start to put the conditions on it. So you gradually start to pay more, but. And is the stuff that we get now really nice.
That's one of the other things that everybody's asking for. They want a really light guitar. Guitars on the lighter side would probably range between 7.1 pounds to about 8.25 maybe. That's on the lighter side.
Especially the older players.
Yeah.
They're on shoulders.
So everybody wants that light stuff. So what I've been doing is I've been sourcing the wood. I go right to our supplier. I take a trip. I live down the freeway there a little bit. I take a trip there in the morning. I go pick up, I go select all the wood for the shop, for the custom shop, bring it back in as opposed to just picking it from whatever, inventory we might happen to have at the time. Mm-hmm. It's better that way for me because I label them, I use them myself, so it's all going to be light, two-piece. I don't think I'm using any three-piece spreads right now at all, which is kind of nice because you usually use three or two-piece, but... Right now, everything is two-piece, which is better.
Now, let me ask you, I'll throw this out to all of you guys. For the regular Doheny and for the V12, the humbucker one, what have you found is the best wood for the sound? I mean, what do you like? What would you recommend? If I was coming in like, yeah, I want a V12, what would you recommend as a good wood to really bring out those pickups?
For me, personally, ash.
You know, it depends on what you're going for. Again, it depends on the fingerboard you choose.
Yeah.
So if you said, well, I went rosewood and you went alder, that's not a wrong answer.
So you would do ash with a rosewood?
I would do ash with a rosewood or a Caribbean rosewood fingerboard.
Yeah.
Maple neck.
What do you think?
I'm going to do the okume because I want to look at that really badly.
Look
well,
at
no. It's a really pretty wood.
But you have, you were showing me some other stuff that, I forget what you call it, but it's figured, it's actually diseased wood. But
you're talking about the Buckeye burl.
Yeah,
this stuff right here is diseased, really. This is, all the little black lines that you see on there are rot in the wood.
So right, right.
When you,
it's interesting.
That's what the spalting is.
That's what spalting is, exactly. So this one just happens to have it in this area here, and not so much over here. There is a little bit over here and whatnot. But
he showed me some bodies of this stuff, and it just the patterns were just amazing. And
they are pretty neat.
What you have is wood in state of decomposition,
yes.
Actually.
Right. Give me that rot.
I want that rot.
Yeah.
Rot top.
But they make for great patterns. Because every one of them sits its own thing.
It makes them unique.
Yeah.
Now, have you ever done one of these guitars with a maple top on it?
Yes.
And how does that sound?
It sounds really nice. It's going to be the ones that I've done, Doheny style, that have had a maple top were hollow. So that's a whole different animal than this. Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about a guitar, solid body guitar with a top, the top is probably going to be less than a quarter inch thick.
Yeah.
So it's really the backing, the material that you're using for the back that's going to, pretty much dictate what the tone of the...
Does the maple brighten it up?
Yes.
It would, sure.
Yeah. No, it's... that's interesting. And I didn't even know you guys made a hollow one.
Yeah. We do. We make a hollow one.
Is it just hollowed out internally, or does it have like enough hole or something on it?
It's the Doheny Deluxe. Mm-hmm. That it has two large tone chambers, one here and one here, mm-hmm. And the center is always solid, and we glue whatever top you want on top of that. So I make the spread out of okume, for example. I made one with okume and did a spalted maple top, just like this one. You can also order one with or without an F hole. That's mm-hmm. another option, and whatever color you want. They sound a lot more. They have more of a woody sound.
Right,
it's,
right.
It's definitely.
And it must be how much difference in weight?
Oh, it's considerably different.
Considerably
it's lighter.
Now, you were talking about that the finishes and the paint jobs. Now, there's all the regular G&L production line, your
60
metallic
colors, I believe,
your metal flake is like amazing. Yeah. But what is offered different in the custom shop? What else can you get? I mean, besides like this type of wood with this.
Well, I mean, there's a guitar that he posted for a bass, and that customer wanted a purple guitar, which mm-hmm. we offer purple, but it's a purple metallic. But this guy just didn't want any candy in there,
he wanted
a specific shade of purple. So he sent a photo, and the paint guy made up a sample, and we sent him a picture back, and he said, that's it, and we went ahead with the order. So he wanted a specific thing, mm-hmm. and that's where you're going to get that in this case.
Mm-hmm. So you can pretty much order any type of look?
Right now I'm building a guitar for a customer that is made out of Buckeye burl. And Buckeye burl is generally very dark. As soon as you start shooting any type of clear material on it, it starts to darken up. So there's dark areas and light areas of the material, but it all gets dark. And he wants purple, a transparent purple that doesn't go into the pink side. So because
that's what's on your Insta, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the one that's on my Instagram right now. As a matter of fact, so we shot it in purple, and he goes, can you make it darker? I go, as soon as I start putting more coats on it, it's going to get way too dark. So it got dark almost to where it was almost like a black. Mm-hmm. And so we lost the whole thing. So then these are samples. I'm not doing bodies. We sampled. So I started to go, let me start with pink. So I started with pink, and I got to this real pretty magenta color. Just using pink. Shoot pink, more pink, starts turning red, and it starts. And if you shoot more, it starts getting into the dark red part of the spectrum. So he really liked that magenta, and I go, we can do that, no problem. So sending these photos back and forth via text, you know, you try to take the picture as best as you can,
yeah.
and do the color correction. And I tell him, I go, this the photo doesn't do it justice. So we ended up doing that purple, and he loves it. He can't wait to get it. And that was a process. So I'm doing several right now with a couple customers that are like that, where we're coming up with the color as we go through the build. To say, I want this. Right now, I'm doing a faded three-tone sunburst in nitro. So the fade part is the hardest part, because the customer's version of a fade and my version might be different. So we're going to see where we're at and then try to meet in the middle and get him something that. And this is also over a quilted maple top.
Oh,
so
wow.
So I told him, I go, you got to be careful, because if you make it too dark, you're going to lose a lot of the quilting that you have on the top. So it's those are the things that we're
so you do back. the traditional nitrocellulose
yes.
finish, which is like the older guitars that yellows. Like I think my bass is yellow now. Yeah. It used to be white, but that's that finish. But what other finishes? Just
All the custom shop stuff standard like this would be urethane.
Urethane.
Yes, the regular production stuff is poly. This is urethane. I use a urethane color and top coat simply because it goes on a lot thinner, and it will act kind of sort of like lacquer over the years, where it'll start sinking into the wood. It's not so hard like polyester top coat can be, but
how does it compare to the nitro cellulose?
Well, the nitro is much much thinner. I mean, it's so thin that you can almost see the grain pattern through the wood. That's a whole difference. So we start off with urethane, and then we offer the nitro option.
As an option.
Yeah.
But I mean, what do you think in sound? Do you think the nitro's better or the urethane's?
I think they're both comparable to each other simply because of the thinness. So a lot of people focus a lot of effort into the what type of material. I like to focus on how much of it we use.
Right.
That's
But is the urethane more durable than the nitro?
Yes, it is. It's more durable.
That's another thing. I mean, if it's your workhorse, it's going to get beat up a little bit. So
well, those guys looking for like a relic looked.
Right.
With urethane, it'll look like a lacquer thing. You know, so if you were going for that type of look, that'll do it.
The urethane will work.
Uh-huh,
you'll relic
I can do a light age treatment on urethane. That looks pretty convincing. That's good. The heavy aging, the cracking, the weather checking can only be done on lacquer.
Because I love, like for this one, this burst, I love the way you guys do them. And you showed me other ones that had.
So one of the things that I work with Malcolm. Malcolm's our painter, and he's a great guy because he does so much there every day. And then to come up to him and go, hey, Malcolm, can we do this here, but maybe get rid of the blue? Just use these two shades. Sure, sure. And he'll shoot one, and we'll look at it. We'll go like, okay, well, never mind. We'll just go back to this, you know. We do this in different shades. So we're starting to mess around with different shades, purples. And that's really exciting for me because we do a lot of blues. Blue is very popular. It's very popular with me, very popular with people that are our customers. And so we're doing different shades of colors. Like we're using this shade of blue right here for a whole body.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing fades that are going from one corner to the other. We can go this way, we can go vertical, we can go horizontal fades. And
yeah,
those
it's
fades
hard to
be
see on
colors.
The camera, but this the way this goes to this like darker, richer
if
cobalt
you go,
blue.
If you go to the Custom Shop Instagram page and you follow us, you'll be able to see.
And what's
this
it called?
Close.
Just the GNL Custom Shop?
GNL Guitar.
GL
Guitar Custom Shop. We have to look it up. We have so many links.
Well, we're almost out of time. So while you're looking for that one, it's GNL Musical Instruments on Facebook, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And is there a custom shop for Facebook?
Yes, GNL Custom Shop.
GNL Custom Shop. And you'll see, because he posts pictures of what he's working on and stuff, and he talks a little bit about some of the things, how he does stuff.
Yeah.
Can we do the Instagram pitch on it? So his,
go for it.
Instagram is glguitars_custom_shop. glguitars_custom_shop. And if you want to see all the weird stuff I do with the projects, resuscitating old guitars and parts from decades ago, that is at CLF Research. CLF stands for Clarence Leo Fender. At CLF Research on Instagram and Facebook.
Yeah, and he had posted some stuff up recently, some of the original machines that Leo had, I think, built, or had built, or some of you were showing some of the really old, I mean, some of the stuff he was using.
Was it the stuff that was, like, out in that storage spot, like, way out at the far end of the building?
Yeah, well, you had, like, an ad for, like, you showed a picture of an ad, like an old type of...
He's talking about the pin router.
Oh, that. Yeah. Oh,
you got to see some of the stuff that, yeah, at their factory, you can see some of these original machines, and it's interesting what he developed to make certain things. It's very clever in terms of he just built something to, you know,
to satisfy that need.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's just amazing.
It's like a working museum there.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is we're trying to take some of the like even the really oldest of machines, and then pull them out of the various corners of the building and then reassemble them into sort of like a little mini CLF Research custom shop crazy town.
Yeah.
That'll be fun.
And also, too, go to the glguitars.com, if I'm correct. You have like a little questionnaire thing you can ask, like what, you know, you can choose the neck, and I think that's for your regular guitars, too.
In the main, let's see, if you go to guitars, made in USA guitars, then you're faced with a little tree, right? I think you get like Fullerton Deluxe, Fullerton Standard, CLF Research, and then option order. Option order is where all our Fullerton stuff has been before we recently started doing this Fullerton Deluxe, CLF, where they were sort of fixed things.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, you just go to Legacy and you could just pick out all this stuff. That hasn't changed. We just needed to put kind of a handle on it, a name tag, and we called it option order. But that's the normal.
Yeah, well, you got to check this out because it talks about some of the. You got to, you know, when you're picking your guitar, it's really interesting because you can like, well, yeah, do I want that type of neck? Do I want that kind of? You know, I'm just using generalities right now, like the fretboard, right. But there's other things
like custom pickup configuration. Well, not in the options page, but.
Right, there's,
shop.
But yeah. Just in go the, through that whole main, area. Yeah, yeah. It's
even
really
before
cool.
You get, even before you get to custom shop, there's a lot of stuff you can do, you know, from different woods and collars and pick guards and neck profiles. That's just in the main factory. That's how we've always been.
Right.
Well, no, it's actually not. It's, we started getting that way in the 90s, and it just kept going.
but it's cool.
That's still there. Yeah,
yeah it's cool because you can really hand pick. Even in the standard models, you can pretty much customize, make it yours.
At that price, I mean, nobody does that at that extent. So, I mean, it's something that a lot of people just don't know about yet, you know.
And then real quick, if somebody wants to order a custom instrument, do they go through the store, right, and contact you and then go from there?
Yeah, the dealer will hash out what the customer wants. In some cases, we'll get an email here and there, but if you go to one of the dealers that's, you know, labeled as a premier dealer or a custom shop dealer, that guy knows what he's doing and he knows how to field, you know, what the customer is after, you know. And if it's off the sheet and he needs to ask us, then it's not a big deal.
Right.
You know, just ask us.
Right. And I applaud you guys because you guys are real loyal to your dealers and that's important. That's very important. So www.glguitars.com is the main site. Check it out. Check out all these, the Facebook and Instagram. It's really interesting what they're doing, and especially, David, what you're doing with the custom shop. Some of the guitars are just truly beautiful and unique. And those woods, I mean, who'd have thought that we would, you know, that rot would be popular? You know what I mean? It's just amazing. But anyway, thank you guys again for coming down.
Thank you, Jeff.
I want Ash, if it's okay, just give us like a couple of minutes of something really do you want to use this guitar or
it's up to you.
Stick with that time wise.
Okay. And everybody have a great night.
Maybe we should go with the other
one. That's how we do it.
All right, so we're going to have the V12.
That's rock and roll. Yeah.
That one still has a flat low E.
That's how we set it up.
That was by customer request. It'd be slightly out of tune.
It's a blues
That's custom.
Thing.
Yeah, it's a blues thing.
Now we call it jazz.
Yeah.
Here, I'll go ahead and hand it to you. That's so beautiful. All right.